Destination Freedom. Station WMAQ presents Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the American Negro people, a part of the pageant of history, and of our own Destination Freedom. Today we tell the story of Walter White, the Executive Secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, in a chapter entitled Investigator for Democracy.
Of all the things a man may know, of men and books, of science and society, the greatest is to know of himself, of who he is, and where he's going, and on what side of the road he stands. My name is Walter White. My skin is white. My eyes are blue. My hair is blonde. I am a Negro. And I learned very early my identity in the riot-torn year of 1906. My lesson began in Atlanta, Georgia. I was driving home with the town's mail carrier, my father. I was in a hurry to get home.
Walter. Walter.
Yes, father?
You're driving too fast, son. I've told you the hooligans will think we're afraid and start throwing at us. Slow down.
Yes, father.
You see them on the corners there, itching for trouble? We don't want your mother to worry.
Father, is there really going to be a riot?
You read the papers? You see the headlines egging on the hooligans? Telling them the Negro is the cause of all their troubles. Drive careful, son. Keep your eyes open.
I drove carefully. I opened my eyes just wide enough to see fear creeping over the town I was born in. The riot my father spoke of hung over it like a cloud. But for me, it was still only talk. Until one evening, running hurriedly downstairs, I stopped father as he was leaving the house. Dad!
Yes, Walter? What is it?
Father, I was riding home in the bus today, and I was on my way to sit in the back with John, but the conductor insisted that I sit up front where it said for white. He kept insisting I was wrong, that I was white, not colored.
So your blue eyes and blonde hair threw him off.
When I got off the bus at Peachtree Street...
I told you to stay off Peachtree. There's trouble, it'll start there.
I know, but nobody bothered me. I walked past the crowds. Some just spoke.
Spoke. They had bricks and guns, and they drove off every Negro who worked on the street. You see any of that?
Yes.
But what did you do?
Well, I didn't do anything. Nobody was bothering me.
Nobody bothered you. They were killing your people. Boy, are you blind? Are you crazy? I've got a notion.
George, it's no use strapping him. He won't understand anything that way.
If you want to understand this way, you won't understand at all.
Life's been easy for him. You've made it easy for all of us. He's not had to see the restrictions around him. What he wants to know is who he is and what side he's on in this fight.
Yes, Father. I wanted to ask you that.
I believe before the night's out, you'll understand. Walter, suppose you keep on your coat and come to town with me.
George.
I'll see that he's safe, Mother. They're going to get a gun. Hitch the wagon, Walter. Your questions will be answered.
I got the wagon ready and rode with my father through the tense streets. And I found myself almost looking forward to the riot. Father, how long did a riot last?
Until the hate and fear that's been whipped up in the mob cool off. Or until the people who are on the side of justice and freedom stand up and fight for it. That's what we're doing. Whoa. Whoa there, Jed. Power up and come inside, son. We'll get some protection.
I remember my hand shook a little as I tied the wagon and followed my father inside the store. Clerk Shelby looked as if he'd been waiting for us.
Mr. White, at last. I wondered when you'd get some sense and come in.
I never thought I'd have to see you for a gun.
You're lucky. I've known you since you was that high, George White. Mighty lucky. If that crowd out there knew I was selling the gun to a Negro, they'd blast my place wide open.
How much is the gun, Mr. Shelby?
Well, now, seeing as how it's you... Wait till I see what these out-of-town fellas come back for.
Hey, Kurt. What about them pistols we ordered?
Yeah, what about them?
Speak up. You ain't sold them, have you?
Well, now, no, but you know firearms is against the city ordinance.
Will you throw them out, or do we go behind the counter and get them?
Now, what are you going to do with them?
Hear that? What are we going to do? We're going to shoot the first Negro we see, that's what. What are you so slow for? Put them on the counter.
I'm coming. There.
Is six all you've got?
Ain't that enough to do your work?
Maybe. Get them off the counter, boys, and come on.
It'll be
dark before you know it. The fun will start.
Oh!
Watch out. Don't knock the customer down. Pardon me, mister. My boy's in sort of a hurry.
Yes, sir. So I see.
Hey, this young fellow your son?
He is my son.
You ought to fix him up with a gun, too. I always say get him started out early. Teach him right soon how to deal with colored folks when they get out of place. Never too young to start teaching them right.
Come on, Black.
Never too young.
No.
All right, don't worry.
They're never too young to teach right.
My father, too, was blonde, blue-eyed. They didn't know he was the first Negro they saw. He took their advice.
Shelby, put out a gun for Walter, too.
I picked up the gun and took it outside to the wagon. I remember the chill that came over me. My blood seemed hot, but my bones were cold. It seemed I was seeing the city I was born and reared in for the first time.
Get up on the wagon. You hold the reins.
Yes, Father.
Drive down the side streets.
But the crowds over there. They're running after a man.
Then they've started it.
Will you come after us?
No, not yet a while. We're invisible now. They run for those they can distinguish first. Then they'll look for us.
Father, they're catching up with him.
Let's lash the horse. We'll hit them off. Get up, boy. Get up, Jed.
The wagon leaped and went after the crowd.
Faster, son. Head off the mob and pick up the man before they get him.
We got ahead and heard the cry of the hunted man.
Help!
Hurry, boy. Faster. Faster.
I whipped the horse until my hand ached. We passed the last of the mob and caught up with their victim.
Come on. Here. Reach on. Jump, boy. Jump.
All right. All right.
Let's go.
I remember the look the mob gave Father as we snatched him away. We took the man home. And that night in our own home, we knew our turn would be next. At nightfall, Father laid his plans.
Walter?
Yes, Father?
You'll stay by the window and watch with me. We can see the whole sweep of the streets from here. Mother?
I'm here, Father.
You take the girls to the rear of the house. There'll be more protection from bullets back there. Now, Walter, you think you can handle that gun?
I'll try, Father.
Lie flat on the floor. You may have to lie there until sunrise. And by sunrise, I hope all your questions will be answered. I hope you'll know why you must always take your stand on the side of the truth. The color of a man's skin's incidental. It's what's right that counts.
A shot came through the window, and I lay close to the floor. Peeping outside. Slowly the mob gathered and began to move toward the house. In it were men whose sons I had played with the day before. Men who knew my father as the town's Negro mail carrier, who for years had carried their conversations, delivered their paychecks, their love letters, their greetings. They were men now egged on to believe that by killing my father, their problems would be eased. Of them, my father said,
"Son, don't shoot until the first man puts his foot on the lawn. And then...
then?
Don't miss."
In the light of the street lamp, I could see them sweep towards us. They were closer. And Father was saying,
"Be careful, son. They're near the lawn. Steady now, boy."
I was very steady, and my hand was on the trigger. The crowd neared the house. I heard one shout,
Hey, you guys! This is where that mailman lives. Hey, guys, come on.
They came on. I sighted one in my gun. I aimed. Then from across the street, our neighbors let out a round of shots. The mob stood stunned for a minute, then withdrew, frightened and running. With my gun ready, I lay on the floor until the sun rose over the streets. Only then my hand relaxed. But inside I was gripped by a knowledge that would never leave me. A lesson I would never need to learn twice. I knew who I was.
I was a Negro in the Jim Crow city. I'd seen the faces of men fighting to uphold Jim Crow. And I was glad I was on the other side. Now I knew my stand. I never needed to ask my father that question again. It was Sunday morning and church bells tolled. Out in the streets, hats and caps of the mob's victims hung on iron hooks of telegraph poles. And some of those who'd worn the hats would never wear them again. When the town was quiet, I went with Father through the street to deliver the mail. For a long time, the wind blew the caps and hats about. Father said,
"The riots died down. But as long as there's segregation and profit to be made out of prejudice, it'll rise up again. Until all men are free and equal, no man's safe, son. You've got your youth, your health. You've got your life ahead of you. Live it right."
"But what can I do, Father?"
"Look around. You'll find out what to do."
I didn't have far to look. My eyes were opening. I looked about me to see where I could start. I had been working in a downtown store, and the boss had heard of the stand I took in the riot. The next morning, when I came in ready for work...
Walter.
Yes, sir?
You needn't take off your things. I'd like a word with you.
Oh, yes, sir.
You know, you really should have told me.
Told you what?
That you were colored.
Well, I guess it was because I was too busy working to think of it.
It's not that I mind, Walter. It's just that some of the customers might object. You understand?
Yes, I understand. I understand very well. I did understand. I understood that there were men who had not fought with the mob, but who carried out the work of mobs in their own way. Soon after, I went to the office of a new organization that whites and Negroes had formed. It was the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. I had an idea. I took it to the head of the Atlanta branch, Dr. Hope. He looked me over and asked,
"Walter, what do you know about the, say, politics?"
"Politics?"
"Yes. The toughest job right now in Atlanta is to get free education for the people. Now, I understand old man White has got enough together to get you an education, but the majority are shut out of the schools."
"I know."
"The city is about to hold an election on the bond issue to raise money to build more schools."
"Oh, gee, that's swell."
"For white students only."
"Oh."
"Not a cent of that money will be spent to improve the deplorable conditions of the Negro schools. If that bond issue is approved in the election, once more, the Negroes' needs will be ignored."
"Well, suppose the colored people all voted against the bill?"
"Sure. Suppose. But they won't."
"Why not?"
"They can't pay the poll tax. That's what the politicians count on."
"Dr. Hope."
"Yes?"
"I'm supposed to be a first-rate insurance salesman."
"What's that got to do with poll tax?"
"I've sold people insurance. Maybe I can sell them on paying poll tax. I'll try." I went about the Atlanta ghetto and talked in favor of paying a tax that kept millions from voting. I talked to the church leaders. They listened. One said,
"Before I ask my flock to dig into their pockets to pay a poll tax, I've got to be able to promise them a return. What makes you think the rich folks won't outvote us?"
"There's 100 poor folks for every rich one, Reverend."
"So it is, so it is. I'll take it up with the congregation."
I talked to the women's clubs.
"We are taking up the voting matter in every club in the city, Mr. White. Have you any idea how much back taxes we'd have to pay to vote?"
"No, but whatever the price, it would be worth it."
"The price will be more than $800,000. Do you think the community can afford that much?"
"I don't know. I only know the community can't afford to go without education. I say, get the education first. We'll get rid of the poll tax later." And on the outskirts of Atlanta, I talked to the plowmen.
"What are you trying to tell me, son? Pay the poll tax? You're crazy."
"It's either pay the poll tax or put your oldest son behind the plow for the rest of his life."
"Nonsense. My son's going to school. No future in plowing."
"What school?"
"Well, Well, first he'll start in the schools in Atlanta.
If they pass this bond issue, not a penny of the money will be spent on schools for Negroes.
What?
That's a fact.
Well, maybe the missus wouldn't mind if we took that money we saved to send the kids north and gamble on a chance of getting them educated down here. By Jove, son, I'll help you get every farmer about town to march to the polls with their taxes in their hand. Giddy up, Nelly. Giddy up.
The farmers began saving their tax money and waiting for the election day. There were others waiting for it, too. Dr. Hope had heard from them.
Walter.
How's the campaign going, Dr. Hope?
You've gone too far.
Too far?
Yes. The Ku Klux Klan been into my office. They say if you don't stop this campaign and stir up Negro voters, they'll ride through the neighborhoods on election eve. They parade right through town. What'll we do?
What'll we do? Well, don't you see, this makes us win.
What are you talking about?
It's the fighting spark we needed. If the Klan's against the voting, it'll be the one thing that'll stir everybody to voting. Let them parade. The Klan paraded, and out from their homes came voters who hadn't seen a poll in a decade. When the elections were over, the city leaders called a meeting to see what had happened to education in Atlanta.
I'm telling you, I never seen so many people paying poll taxes in all my born days.
The poor folks were the only ones voting.
It was that upstart Walter White that did it.
Now, gentlemen, as city officials, we have to face the facts. We've called in this upstart, Walter White, to give him a chance to speak.
Speak? I'd like to speak there with a rope.
Now, Walter, surely you don't want to see this great, glorious city of Atlanta go without schools.
Of course not. You see, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People asked the people to vote against that bill because we believe that education should mean equal opportunity for all children, Negro and white. We voted against that school bill, but if you write another bill that provides funds for both races, we'll reconsider.
Outrageous. We never had anything like that. Well, I won't stand for it.
You ought to be run out of town, that's what...
Now, gentlemen, we came here to compromise. Suppose we wrote another bill, Walter, and included the Negro people. Would your organization support it?
We would.
Well, now, I suppose you'll go out and get people to pay more poll taxes so they can pass this new bond issue.
No, I think now I'll go out and fight to have the poll tax repealed altogether. I walked out of the city hall feeling as though I'd taken a great step forward. I went home to tell my father of the victory and of the new organization. But he was out. It was a dark, rainy night, and a car slid on the wet pavement.
Watch out!
And he lay stretched out in the rain. I found him. I shook him. Father! Father, are you hurt? Father!
Better take him to a hospital, young fella. He's hit bad.
Yeah, take him down to Grady Hospital.
You better hurry, fella.
I hurried. I hitched up the old buggy and hurried to the hospital. The door was closed.
Doctor! Doctor! Somebody let me in!
What is it?
I want the doctor.
Well, I'm the doctor, young man. What is it?
Doctor, it's my father here. He was hit by a car.
Where is he?
In the car. I'll help you carry him in.
Nurse?
Yes, doctor?
Get a bed ready in Ward A.
But, doctor, that's George White.
What's the difference if it's George Pink? Get a bed ready.
Yes, doctor. I'll tell the superintendent.
Now, young man, let's get your father in out of the rain.
Yeah, in the wagon. He's hardly breathing.
Here, take his arms. Help me get him inside. He's got to have attention quick. This way. Bring him over this way to Ward A. We got some beds open there.
We moved to where the beds were open when suddenly the door was blocked.
Dr. Graves, did you examine the patient?
Yeah, and he's bad off.
I mean, did you check his race?
Race?
The nurse says this man's a Negro. You know the city laws.
I know this man's hurt. Step aside.
The Negro ward's on Peachtree Street. You'll take him there.
But that's too far away.
Are you telling us who to take in? That's the law. You'd better get started.
I got started. But when I reached the Negro ward, the doctor shook their heads. The man who had taught me my identity had only a few words to say.
Walter.
Yes, Father.
How did the voting come out?
Good, Father. If they had taken you in out of the rain, you might have had...
I might have had a chance. Is that it? All right, boy. My chance is up. I didn't kill Jim Crow, and it's killing me.
It's not my chance anymore. It's yours. Don't be afraid to take it. Don't be afraid.
It was the last lesson he left me. And there in the crowded Jim Crow ward of the Atlanta hospital, I lost all fear of fighting for what I knew must come to all men: equality, justice, and freedom. And years later, a poet, James Weldon Johnson, a secretary of the organization I was to devote my life to, said,
"There are about 200 lynchings a year, Walter. The NAACP is sending men out who can get the facts and tell them to the people. We need someone who can mingle with the mobs. Since you're minus a suntan, when you're in the white community, you'll be white. And I understand you've had some experience with riots."
"I have."
"Good. You'll need it. If your trips are successful, Walter, you'll clear the way for people to wage a determined drive to stop lynching. If you fail, you may lose your life. Will you take the job?"
"I'll take it."
"Good. All you do now is wait till the papers tell of a lynching. Then you track it down."
I didn't have long to wait. When a sharecropper named Jim McElroy tried to organize a Tennessee sharecroppers union, he mysteriously disappeared. I took the train to Tennessee and got off at the little town he lived in. Townspeople were in busy knots around the station. The sheriff looked at me suspiciously and said,
"Looking for someone, stranger?"
"Just looking for a place to eat and sleep."
"You're sure that's all you're looking for?"
"What else is there around here?"
"Deputy."
"Yes, Sheriff."
"Deputy, show him the way to the hotel. He's okay."
The deputy took me to a weather-beaten shack that carried two signs on it. One said hotel, and the deputy saw me staring at the other.
"What you looking at the sign for?" "Says no Negroes allowed."
"Yes."
"Oh, you from up north ain't used to them. It's for colored folks to get off the train. Let's them know the hotel's just for us white folks. Get it?"
"Yeah. Just for us white folks. Yeah."
"Sure. Come on, make yourself at home."
I made myself at home. And I went walking among the townspeople, listening to their talk in the general store, till I heard the name of Jim McElroy.
"So this Negro of McElroy starts fighting back, and I say,
don't shoot him yet, fellas. Wait a while."
"Yeah, you sure did. I heard you, Sheriff."
"And then I said, let's have some fun first, boys.
You looking for something, stranger?"
"I'd like to buy some tobacco, if you don't mind."
"I'm sheriff, and I'm clerk. You never did tell me what your business is, stranger."
"I sell insurance."
"Well, we don't need no insurance down here. The guy who needed it ain't here, is he, boys?" "We're all out of tobacco, mister. All that's left is a rope. You need any rope?"
I was looking for rope and for faggots, and I found the true story behind the lynchings of Jim McElroy, the story no papers had printed. And while I talked to the lynchers, I suppressed my own anger and sickness at the sight of sick men. Sent my reports to the association. Remained friends with the townspeople until the sheriff came to invite me to a party. "Come in."
"You never did get that tobacco, stranger. Thought I'd bring you some. Here, catch." "Oh. Had a new shipment come in today."
"Oh, thanks."
"Think nothing of it. Somehow I seem to sort of take a liking to you.
White. Walter White's my name."
"Yeah, White. Some of the boys are sort of suspicious, but I spotted you as a good prospect the minute I laid eyes on you."
"Prospect for what?"
"For the greatest organization to uphold the power of the white race in the world. We take only the cream of the crop."
"For what?"
"The Klan. I'm acting Grand Dragon."
"I see."
"You're lucky. I know those pure, true-blood Gentiles when I sees one. You in."
"Thanks."
"White. I like that name. In fact, there's going to be a little lynching tonight. We want you to sort of get initiated with Farmer named Grady."
"What did he do?"
"Same thing McElroy tried to do when we stopped him. Getting uppity, siding against Jim Crow laws."
"Oh, I see."
"You be called to come to meeting before we start." "What's the matter? Scared?"
"Suppose they put the authorities on us for it."
"Oh, yeah, I wanted the authorities. Besides, have you ever heard of a man being convicted for lynching a Negro?" "Don't worry.
I'm leaving a regalia for you. You pay for them later.
He left a sheet and a hood. I had passed his test for white supremacy. I went out to pass mine for democracy. I warned the sharecroppers of the attack, and as I was walking back to my hotel, one of them returned the favor. He met me in the dark.
You that man called Walter White?
Who are you?
The farmer sent me to warn you. The sheriff's changed his mind about lynching Grady. They're out to lynch you instead. Catch the train that stops up the way. Get on it. Stay.
I ran down the railroad track until I saw the train. I jumped aboard as it pulled off. The conductor came up to me.
Mighty odd place to be boarding a train, mister.
I know. I'm in a hurry. Here's my fare.
You know, it's too bad you're leaving town before the fun starts.
Fun?
Yeah. It's going to be a lynching. Who? Some color fella named White. A passion for White, say.
Yeah?
Yeah. Of course, I say the boys must be losing their grip not to recognize him. I'd know if the fella was white or colored. Soon as I saw him, wouldn't you?
Naturally.
Say, don't go in there.
Why not?
That side of the train's for colored folks. Don't you see the sign? White folks sit in this car.
Oh, I see.
Yep. Too bad you're going away before the fun starts. Yep, you're gonna miss all the fun.
Yes. I missed all the fun in Phillips County that night. But my reports to the world on lynching told the story that brought truth to millions of people. It was one of the stories the association has brought before the public. The startling fact was not only that segregation and Jim Crow encouraged lawlessness, but in more than 1,900 lynchings in a decade, no criminal involved has ever been adequately punished. I've helped the association to win 23 out of 24 Supreme Court cases against segregation, restrictive covenant, and vote restriction. And we have petitioned the United Nations to investigate the denial of liberty to American minorities. I say again, of all the things a man may learn of science and society, the greatest is to learn to take his stand for the equality of all people.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Walter White, Executive Secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The story was based on material in Walter White's book, A Man Called White, which is published by the Viking Press. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Walter White was played by Arthur Peterson. Others were Gladys Williams, Maurice Copeland, Ken Griffin, Larry McKinley, Charles Mountain, and Fred Pinkard. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Bobby Christian. This is Hugh Downs inviting you to be with us again next week, when Destination Freedom will tell the story of Dory Miller, one of the heroes of Pearl Harbor. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.